Hi, good morning, everyone. Welcome to the HTI2 Proposed Rule Task Force Group 1 meeting. I'm Seth Pazinski with the HHS Assistant Secretary for Technology Policy, and I'll be serving as your designated federal officer for today's call. As a reminder, this meeting is open to the public, and we encourage public feedback throughout the meeting. Comments can be made via the Zoom chat feature, and we also have time towards the end of our agenda for verbal public comments as well. So we're going to get started with our meeting, and I'm going to start with a roll call. So when I call your name, if you could please indicate that you are present. And I'm going to start with our acting co-chair for today, Steve Eichner.
Good morning.
Good morning. And Bryant Thomas-Karras will not be able to make today's call. Shyla Blinn.
Good morning.
Good morning. Hans Butendijk. Lee Fleischer. Raj Gudvarti. To get the message that Jillian Haney will not be able to join us today as well. Joel Hartzell.
Present. Thank
you. Stephen Hester. Aaron Holt Coyne. Jim Jurgis. Mary Beth Carrillo.
Good morning.
Good morning. Kiki Loma Ashukantan.
Good morning.
Good morning. Zanette Sumar King. Naresh Sundar Rajan.
Good morning.
Good morning. And Thomas Wilkinson.
Hello, good morning.
Good morning. And I see Hans Butendijk has joined us. Has anyone else, did I miss anyone, or has anyone else just joined? Okay, well, please join me then in welcoming our acting co-chair, Steve Eichner, for opening remarks and to get us into our meeting. Steve, over to you.
Good morning, all. Thank you all for all of your work thus far in Group 1. We've got an exciting agenda today where we're going to focus on PDMP and come back around to ECR. And hopefully we'll continue our work and begin to shift from using the worksheet into making our recommendations in a Google document. Let's go to the next slide. So we got a quick agenda we've just kind of reviewed. And as always, we will have public comment towards the end of our meeting. Next slide, please. So just a quick review of our charge. The HTI2 proposed rule task force is evaluating and providing comments and recommendations to the HITECH on the HTI2 rule. And HITECH will take our recommendations, review them, and make any necessary modifications and submit them to the Assistant Secretary for Technology Policy. And recommendations are due prior to the end of the 60-day comment period, which comes to place in early October. Next slide, please. As discussed earlier, this is our quick update on where we stand in our schedule. Today is, of course, August 20th, and we're meeting and working through a couple of items. And we've got just another couple of meetings left to go with only one subgroup meeting left. Then we'll meet as the full task force to compile our recommendations across the different work groups and compile our material, put it into a text document, and forward it to HITECH for their review comment and forwarding on to ASTP. Next slide. So we're now going to get into the meat of our meeting, focusing on PDMP and ECR. So let's, a quick review of our timeframes and breaking out and using a new tool in our Zoom chat to, as a timer to help us keep track of time. The meat of our meeting today is focused on PDMP, but we will touch on a few other topics as well. So let's get into the meat of our meeting and talk about CPOE. Can we bring up the worksheet? And let's zoom in a little bit, if we can. Let's zoom up a little further. That's great. Hans, do you want to, sorry?
Go ahead, you're good.
Hans, do you want to give us a quick?
Excel, can we go ahead and start the clock as well? Thank you.
Thank you. So Hans, you want to give us a summary of your recommendation?
So we're looking at row 12, right, on CPOE?
Yes.
Okay. I was just navigating to PDMP. I'm right next door to that. Let's see. Here, the comment that I was making around CPOE A2 is that related to lab, depending on which lab you're going to be communicating with, there may be different requirements for what data needs to be shared. So as an example, if I'm ordering and I'm working with my internal lab, or let's say a hospital, health system that has lab systems integrated or not, but particularly if they are not integrated, they are separate, they're integrated, but they're a separate system, then the communication need not fully conform to LOI in order to achieve that. And there are many implementations out there, they operate, they run. And if you were to require LOI as an example to be applied there, it would need to support a lot more data to be shared through the order that currently might be shared in other ways already or is accessible otherwise. If you go to a public health lab on the other side with the work that's happening on eTOR, then you're much closer to needing to support a full LOI or a large chunk of that. If you're communicating with a lab, a commercial lab, as a reference from a clinic or otherwise that doesn't have their own lab system, you need to have, if it's used for lab for public health reporting, because it's a reportable result potentially, you would need to include more data than what is necessary for the immediate performance of the lab. So we're looking there at, can we phrase that rather than, and they're asking for it in the feedback as well, do we need to adopt all of LOI or LRI or some of it? And our reaction would be that it makes sense to tailor it to the environment that you're in so that that you don't need to fully support everything always. You support the data that is relevant and using then parts of LOI. LOI and LRI have been defined with a very modular approach to be able to say for this scenario, you need to support the public health capabilities of LOI or LRI. For a general commercial lab interaction, you need to support this one if there are certain capabilities, etc. So we are suggesting, and that's where this comment comes from, that a more modular approach of adoption of LOI and LRI is appropriate. There's already a large installed base of version 2 in place. And having to replace everything, if you will, or that is not as likely. That's a lot more work. But rather, if the additional data is done in accordance to the newer standards that are in place, where you need to add on to it, it can be plugged into existing interfaces as well from a standards perspective. We have demonstrated that in many different places where we pre-adopt into a version 2.3.1, and we add things to it that are actually coming from version 2.9 or 2.2, sorry, 2.8.2 or something like that. So we would promote and suggest that a modular approach, working with HL7 others to define what are the appropriate components when, would be very helpful to do to move forward rather than a full step everything for everything.
Okay, let's move two columns to the right so we can show J.
Yeah, and I did not put in a specific wording yet, but
looking at the profiles in LOI, LRI, can we use those to our advantage here?
Those are the ones that that I'm indeed pointing to. So there are component profiles or profile components in LOI and LRI, like public health, like putting have the ability to hold communications, newborn blood screening, etc. So there are a number of different ones that are in play that are applicable that you can say for this purpose, you need to be able to support that. So for example, for communicating a lab order to a lab that in turn is going to have a requirement on that kind of a test to report that to public health, you need to support the ability to send that additional data according to the lab order's public health profile.
So thinking about a recommendation that looks at, rather than just general certification, looking at certification to the particular profile?
Correct.
Or do other folks have opinions, suggestions in that space? Does that help meet our objectives?
So from a public health perspective, the intent is to get as part of the order to get the right information. So it would help there that there's opportunity to get that without having to always for other purposes use the full LOI. If you want to, you could support the full LOI, but you wouldn't have to. You would not have to change existing information.
Yeah, so if we were to develop a recommendation that said, rather than looking at general certification against the entirety of LOI, LRI, looking at submodular, for lack of a better phrase, certification, and you could pick one or more modules or one or more profiles.
Right.
And that would enable the HIT vendor to certify their product or seek certification for their product for whatever market their product was targeted at, whether it was focused on entities that have public health reporting or looking at internal uses within a hospital or within a hospital system where that module is not reporting directly to public health. Is that fair?
I would say so. Curious what others think.
Do other folks have thoughts? Will this work? Are there any problems with it? Should we go ahead and move this to our recommendations column and work on text to make it green and make it more affordable.
And Steve, I will be able to draft a more complete statement of the suggestion if you want to put my name next to it.
Great. Thank you, Hans.
Look at the draft before the next time would be great.
That would be great, yeah, because next week we've got really limited time. We need to move on and begin to shift our things over to the entire task force. Okay, let's go back to our agenda and move on to our next subject.
Yeah, and Steve, just so you didn't have entire silence from the full group, this is Mary Beth, and I'll just weigh in that I think that idea of choosing sort of the subcomponents makes a lot of sense conceptually. I'm not close enough to the sort of workflow on the LOI side to weigh in on that piece, but I like the sort of selection of the subcomponents. So I'm fully in support. And Hans, thank you for drafting some draft language to look at.
Thanks, Mary Beth. Really appreciate that.
Great. And I think, Steve, we're going to readdress the the G20 criteria.
Wonderful. So here we're looking at the new standardized API for public health exchange. And on the screen, we've got our previous discussion and looking at some of our initial recommendations. Is Raj on the phone? Or Raj online today? Don't think he's here. Joel, do you want to talk a little bit about your recommendation?
Yeah, about, so just mainly concerns about subscription for the use of for public health API. We looked at this a little bit for the FHIR app for electronic case reporting and participated in a connectathon earlier this year on this topic. And it, essentially, some of the major findings were that we could use it to identify the patient, essentially. That initial step and the calls that were needed, but largely it was not mature enough at this time to do a lot of the business rules that were needed to pull out, to identify which case reports, which information should be sent. And I think right now with the current flow of ECR, it's the business rules that are running would be much less within the EHR through the app that could potentially use subscription are much less than what public health would likely need to pull specific information for a case. And so, I mean, long story short, it's mainly, I have questions about kind of the intent, the level in which this could be used and is it mature enough? Really, at this point,
or is it mature enough with sufficient enough detail?
Yeah.
So I think those two concepts are kind of tied.
Yeah.
Together, so that it may be mature enough to pull single values out of a subscription, but not sophisticated enough to meet all the needs for public health.
Yeah, I mean the way I'm envisioning public health would want to use this would really be a follow-up on a case report. I'm sorry for the ECR use cases, but you want to know if a specific treatment, you get a case report for chlamydia, you want to know if they received azithromycin, ceftriaxone, very not just particular profile or all the patient information because they've already received that, but you're querying specifically for content and specific content within that profile.
Right. So look, So looking at a more detailed subscription rather than a more generalized subscription request.
Yeah. I think that's where the value would be. And I at least my exposure has not shown that value or maturity level is there.
At least for at least some public health use cases.
Yes. But I think Hans suggested looking at specific use cases. There may be other use cases in which this would be useful. And Hans, I don't know if you've thought about that more, and if there's any, if you had specific thoughts on use cases, and maybe that's where we target this.
Right, because children with special. Well, Hans, after you.
Okay. Yeah. The I think that that has been one of the questions that we have been talking through across a number of EHRs. So what would be the use cases? And looking at G10 and G20 kind of combined, and currently it states is that you need to demonstrate support for subscriptions, and to what extent do we need to do that? All of you as CDI resources or part thereof. And the direction that we're heading, because it's hard to indicate for every HIT that's being certified against that, what are really the top three that everybody should use? Or what are the top that need to be used? It's hard. And saying that we need to support subscriptions for all resources, well, just pick on one resource, Encounter, for example. Then at that point in time, well, what subscription on the Encounter are you interested in? An emergency room Encounter created, a discharge, something else that happened during the Encounter. So there's a variety, even when you say subscriptions on a resource, there are potentially multiple ways in which you can look at it. If you look at a subscription on observations, lab tests, is that are you interested in any final test that was amended? Is it something that was finalized? Which ones are you looking at? Or was it just very specific ones because you reported on it in a case report and something else happened? So there are many, many different variations that could be there. So it's unclear what that means. Direction we were thinking is to say, pick as a certified software, pick two or three subscription topics, not counting prior authorization, because that is already addressed inside DOSA in G34-35. But besides that, pick two or three that are most suitable for your environment. They could pick from G10, they could pick from G20, and they could be public health focused, they could be otherwise focused, but pick something that's meaningful that demonstrates we are making progress with subscriptions. But we have a good idea that those topics will actually be helpful for that system, for that environment. It's the same approach that was taken for clinical decision support when that started. The number was one, but somewhere between one and five, to say is that you can do any kind of clinical decision support. Pick something that makes sense and demonstrate that you can do it. So we are thinking that might make more sense here, because like you, Joel, we're trying to think about, well, which use case is not only reasonable in itself, that may vary, but which one is reasonable for everybody, all HIT, particularly EHRs, because G20 is part of base EHR. So every EHR that wants to be certified for use in CMS and otherwise, is that it must support then the three identified. That seems to be too rigid at this point in time.
Well, Hans, but isn't this focused on public health exchange? So looking at subscriptions, any subscription here would need to be focused on, I think, on a public health use case.
We were looking at it between G10 and G20, so that across those do that. So if we say from a public health, specifically G20, do we want to make sure that at least one is in pools from G20 resources rather than G10 and profiles? That's consideration. Question then is from public health perspective, which goes back to what kind of subscriptions are helpful. And we could not really identify any clear ones, and not everybody has to support all the reporting to public health, the variations of that. So what's really all the data that is there? What is really from a public health perspective, what are some use cases that are helpful? We couldn't really identify anyone particularly. That's why we were coming up with 2 to 3 across G10 and G20.
Okay. Yeah, I think there may be some public health use cases around birth defects that might be of some interest for children with special health care needs.
And then that goes to, if you look at those in itself, good examples, but do specialized EHRs that wish to be certified support that kind of information?
Yeah, oh, I agree. I was just pulling up a couple of examples where subscriptions might be of more use from a public health perspective than looking at support for general or infectious disease case investigations.
Right. No, totally fair. And but that's the challenges that we then ran into, is that which examples would be applicable across any EHR, or is it really more dependent if you are a specialty EHR for dermatology or for geriatric care or for pediatrics or whatever, what's the right one that is used there and therefore let them pick? So maybe it is one out of public health and two out of G10 and one out of G20 and pick one. But everybody will have to work then with public health. Is that, okay, we create the topic, will public health be interested in that? So I think there's a bit of back and forth to be figured out.
Yeah, I agree. I think another concern that I've got is that subscriptions and bulk data seem to me to be a factor not only about the software capability of the EHR or HIT module software, but also the hardware on which the software is running. Just from a volume perspective, the ability to do to support a subscription and the ability to support a subscription where data is supposed to be reported for 1,000 patients or whatever is not necessarily the same question.
Yeah, I think with some, I would agree with some of these requirements. It's going to be what's the infrastructure expansion you need to do for the extra volume of exchange and et cetera that's going to happen. That's always going to be a good question.
So I'm not sure if we need to address that concept in our recommendations or consideration, because just being certified without some kind of volume requirement or volume measure may limit the utility at the end of the day, or limit the capabilities at the end of the day. And I would not want to see a provider in a bad situation with software that was certified as supporting subscriptions, but not capable in the provider's operating environment of meeting the business need. So should we make a comment about something in that space about the criterion, if the criterion does not address a volume measure, then that might be a consideration, or should be a consideration.
What would be the statement of a volume measure? Would it be a threshold below which, above which?
I would say minimum level. Off some standard piece of hardware. I don't know. It's not easy. That's part of the challenge.
Yeah, many or quite a few criteria would impact potentially to support that functionality. Would use extra resources, therefore extra hardware, whether it's in the cloud or not, it's extra.
Right, exactly.
And it's still considered as part of the criteria to be measured to say is that if you if this would expand your use beyond XYZ, you don't need to do that, or you do need to do that, or whatever.
Right, and it may be a comment just that the criterion may test just the ability to subscribe to for subscription, but does not address volume.
Correct. It's yes.
And it may be sufficient just to call attention to that fact.
Yeah, and doesn't need. I'm not sure at this point in time. Actually, I'm reasonably sure that if you have the capability of subscription, we have the capability of bulk data, but use of it is very, 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 very limited. So being certified does not mean that it's A, is used or has to be used. That would depend on other programs to say, in order to be eligible, CMS side, for example, you must have the capabilities. Doesn't also necessarily say you have to use it, unless it's a performance measure that might indicate that you have to do this at least X number of times, like prior authorization has in CMS a minimum threshold you need to use it at least X amount of times, one in a year to do that. So it's not ONC that would put the requirement in that sense on it so far. It's just capability.
Right, exactly. So a potential comment in this rule is just acknowledging that limitation.
There might be,
or the limitation of the certification criterion.
Mm-hmm. I think that the big question is that do we want to identify specific public health use cases that will be applicable for all, but not everybody needs to certify to every kind of reporting to public health, but do they have to respond to queries? Or that they need to be able to subscribe and notify. That's why we were looking at two or three subscriptions across G10 and G20 to have that flexibility and work it out based on your client profile, as well as interest from public health and otherwise as to what kind of subscriptions do they want. And have that flexibility.
Immunizations are not really a primary focus here, but Mary Beth, do you have any thoughts?
Yeah, so similar to Joel and Hans, I think we have some concerns we can see a potential use case for subscriptions for immunizations, but it seems very early. And so as I was talking to folks across our community, they were really coming back to needing better definition around what that specification was and then also a testing framework to ensure consistent implementation. So it felt early to put this in rule and regulation. I think there's certainly promise down the road if we look at this and actually do some proof of concept or some pilot testing and add some definition. But I think the overall thoughts from the immunization community was it seems very early to put something like this in rule.
And on the comment that Mary Beth made on how to align on common topics, the additional thought, and that lines up, I think, nicely with that as well, that we were discussing was as we progress, we can use FHIR US Core as perhaps a place, as an example, to define emerging subscription topics that everybody needs to do, or if you are in a certain context, you have to be able to do, so that we can use the mechanism over time as we learn to have a repository, if you will, of well-defined subscription topics and have some indication there is that this is something that everybody needs to do that support FHIR US Core. This is something only that you need to do if you're pediatrics or something that you're something else, and that you can, but when you do it consistently.
So looking at the group of knowledge experts that we have today, we can't really identify a single definitive use case for subscription that's in play today. So are we in a good position to say maybe there shouldn't be a certification criterion yet and more development needs to be done? Before we look at including subscriptions as a supported function or as a certified function?
I would be comfortable with that.
I agree.
Yeah, that sounds like a path forward and a recommendation that ONC work with public health and other stakeholders to identify and test and develop both subscription and bulk models. Is that a good friendly amendment?
Yeah, that works for me, Steve.
Are there any stakeholders that we should specifically call out? Is there any opportunity for this to support pharmacy or other entities that we need to pay particular attention to that have not typically been included? Do we need to include long-term care facilities or other folks that we've not historically had at the table? Schools, other non-traditional trading partners? If you think of any, please add them into our discussion in the worksheet on your own time. We'll put that down as a homework assignment, please. Are there any more additions to this item, or shall we move to the next? Let's go ahead and move to the next Excel. Please. And Rachel, how are we doing on time?
We are good. I think we are going to go on to the PDMP next, and we can start the clock for about 40 minutes on that.
Wonderful. And we've
got... we do have several SMEs on the line. Steve, we may want to have them introduce themselves and just kind of provide a very...
You read my mind.
Okay, great.
Awesome. Pat, would you mind kicking us off with intros? I think you might have some other folks from your team on, but I saw you were top of my list.
Okay. Hello, everyone. Thanks for inviting us to this call. My name's Pat Canoe. I'm the director of the PDMP Training and Technical Assistance Center. We are funded through a Bureau of Justice Assistance grant to provide support, information, and resources to all the 54 PDMPs in the country. Joining me from TTAC is Kevin Borcher. Some of you may be familiar with Kevin. He was, prior to starting with TTAC, the administrator over the Nebraska program with Sync Health. Prior to my joining TTAC way back in 2012, I was over the Texas program. We have another colleague who was not able to make it today, Don Vogt. He's not feeling well, but he was over the Oklahoma program. So hopefully we'll be able to assist you any way we can with this project.
Thank you.
Sure.
So, Hans, do you want to talk a little bit about your recommendations?
Sure. The question here that there's a couple of aspects to it. One is that the way that the criteria is defined is not clear as to whether this is intended to focus on the provider. And when you compare with 29, the clarity on what that is. And when you just read 9, it's not clear. It seems to be combining something. So that's where some of the questions come in. And medication reconciliation generally is already supported. So it's unclear how it fits in here in particular. And that is the fundamental question. Would this provide, and then we're really mostly looking at 29, is it really providing discrete PDMP data, or is it this providing a PDF or view type of data set that is being shared, in which case reconciliation is a hard thing to do because we would have to pull it out of the document using some other methods that are not always appropriate for that purpose, et cetera. So we're looking at, is the intent really, and which we have been talking about and asking for, on getting discrete data that can therefore be ingested in the flow along with other data, medications, drugs, et cetera. But if there's other data as well, that we could do that also. So it starts with the basic question, are we talking about discrete data? And if not, then some of the things may not apply as much, would not be as feasible. If it is that we can get discrete data, then that changes the discussion on some of the aspects as well.
And Pat, I would love it if you and your team can share your perspective as well. And any insights you could share would be fantastic.
Okay. Kevin's definitely more technical than I am, but let me give you a little bit of the lay of the land. There are 54 PDMPs, all the states, DC, Guam, Puerto Rico, and the Mariana Islands. And they are state, territory, district run programs with local jurisdiction laws or state territory level laws. So although most of the PDMPs operate in a very similar fashion, there are differences across the country. When it comes to discrete data, providing discrete data or providing an image of a PDMP report, that's all over the board around the country. Some states, we've been told, have statutes in place that do not allow them to share discrete data, so they just provide an image. Kevin, you have anything to add on that?
I think that's a good summation, Pat. Once again, and I see something in chat about criminal justice agencies. Yes, there are a handful of PDMPs that are operated or housed within a law enforcement bureau or state agency. These are state-run, state-administered systems. And so those state laws and regulations would have to be taken into account whether they can provide discrete data or not.
Yeah, and some of the PDMPs are run by neither public safety or by public health.
Right. Yeah, there's about 5 PDMPs that are housed at a law enforcement agency. There's 17 with health departments, 17 with boards of pharmacy. The rest of them, it's just a mixture of statewide professional licensing agencies or substance abuse programs, things like that. But the majority are housed in both in either a health department or a board of pharmacy.
Do we know about how many are limited in sharing discrete data?
We've asked, every year TTAC conducts a survey of all the monitoring programs on different topics. And so we've asked questions. We don't get 100% response to every question, but we've gotten responses on that question. And I meant to pull it up. I'm sorry. Give me a second. I can run a query to determine that real quick. And Kevin, if you have a thought on that, jump in while I'm stalling.
Coincidentally, last week we posted the Harold Rogers PDMP national meeting in DC, and there was some discussion regarding HTI2 and discrete data. While Pat's looking up the exact numbers, it seems like it is varied where some states are allowed to send discrete data, while others either are not allowed or prefer to send an image through their PDMP through integration. Did I stall you out enough, Pat? And then what percentage supports NCPDP script to support discrete data? That I do not have an answer to.
Kind of ballpark, small, medium, 50% most?
Typically, I don't know if I could give a fair answer on that one.
That's fair.
As a parking lot issue, that might impact using PDMP over TEFCA.
Yeah. Let me interrupt for 1 second. According to our information on our survey from earlier this year, only 13 states indicated that they were able to share discrete data. I don't know if that's accurate or not, though. We are going to start doing research which indicates, or which hopefully will tell us, going through all the statutes, which ones actually have that and which ones may just do it out of policy. I haven't seen the language that prevents it in law. It may be just policy.
And I guess the other aside is that if they're not sharing it as discrete data, what format are they sharing it in? I recognize you may not be able to answer that today, but whether it's a JPEG or a PDF or whatever might be of interest.
I believe it's a PDF. Am I correct, Kevin?
Yeah, I believe that's correct. They send it via typically HTML, and it's in a PDF format.
So of those 13, assuming that it's a reasonable ballpark, how many would support NCPDP script?
That I don't know.
Okay. And the other question that I wasn't sure whether you mentioned it and I missed it. I already got it. So thank you.
What's the distribution of data standards that the PDMPs are currently using? Do we know?
Data standards, do you mean the like ASAP?
Yeah, well, we're also looking at the NCDP 2017. We know there are a couple of different interfaces that folks are using to connect to the PDMPs. Is there a balance between them, or is it all one flavor?
Okay. Well, I'm not sure I understand, and Kevin can bail me out on this one. The data is reported to PDMPs using the American Society for Automation and Pharmacy standard, and there's multiple versions currently in place. But are you talking about the methods to get the data to the user in an integrated environment?
I've got enough, I think. But one of the challenges, I think, is looking at having standards that make it easier for providers to interface with the PDMP in a straightforward manner. And so Hans, you want to explain what the interface looks like?
I'm sorry, Stephen, are you asking me or?
Yeah, can you explain what the interface looks like between the EHRs and the PDMP from the provider's perspective?
Typically, where they're there, it's viewing. You get an image, you get the PDF. There might be portals. Very limited deployment of anything discrete. So it really varies. It follows the pattern as has been described, is that what is the PDMP able to do, and where there is discrete there is the opportunity, but not everybody has support for that they can get discrete data in. Most of it, the vast majority, would be that they have viewing capabilities, but as a result, no ingestion capabilities.
Do we know from the provider's perspective if there's a desire for discrete data?
There is, because the interest and all other considerations aside for a moment, is that that data can further have context for clinical decision making, and assuming a proper authority, rights, et cetera, is that having access to discrete data can feed into that that capability to provide further clinical decision support beyond the clinician being able to view it. So that's where there's the interest to help enhance those parts of the flow that for which you need to have the data discreetly. You could use alerts, otherwise, et cetera, that you then can start to extend to that scope as well. And again, as appropriate, as authorized, et cetera, et cetera. And that's mm-hmm. where state variations in policies and law as to what can be shared indicate how much of that, how far can you go with that or not.
And I don't know if the standard supports it, but I'm wondering whether the return can include a wrapper of discrete data around the PDMP content so that it could be linked into the EHR or incorporated into the EHR as an image, but the wrapper containing enough identification information to match the patient.
Well, that's where I would expect that technology can support that, but that's where policies may not allow for that. So it's a view only. So that's the variations of what can you do depending on the jurisdiction you're in,
right?
On pulling that in further into a simple view.
Right, and part of that was kind of a question back to Pat and Kevin, thinking about the idea of a wrapper around the main content of the PDMP data, where the wrapper could include patient identifying information, but not the medical information that would facilitate incorporating the image into the EHR as an image or as non-discrete data.
And I believe that is how it currently works. There are two hubs that are the interoperability between PDMPs and EHRs and pharmacy data systems as well, where it's end-to-end encrypted. The patient identifying information is even encrypted. So there is an audit ID, but once that's encrypted, decrypted between the two systems, it can contain either discrete data or that image. There was last fall the HL7 Connectathon in Phoenix, where ONC was working to get the FHIR implementation guide for PDMPs going once again. And that should be actually in the voting process with HL7. That's been going on for several months now with PDMP and other stakeholder input. And within that, there was mapping between FHIR and NCPDP and ASAP. So if it is discrete data, it can be passed through FHIR if, once again, that becomes commonplace, where currently it's not.
So part of the challenge there is that it's not yet quite finished published. And the adoption on the PDMP side may initially be limited based on policies, law, funding, resources, correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Yeah, because if it's in ballot now, the ballot won't get reconciled until sometime, very likely, in early 2025.
And in the meantime, NCPDP script would be a consideration as well. But as you indicated, it might be a challenge for TEFCA. Depending on how TEFCA wants to accept or not certain standards. And the question also on the NCPDP script is the adoption for that purpose is very limited as well.
Well, the real issue for TEFCA is looking at pushing the non-discrete data, but I guess that could go in. But if there's a wrapper, that would work. So PDMP could respond to TEFCA as long as the non-discrete data is in a, or the discrete data is, or sorry, the non-discrete data or image was in a wrapper that had the patient information. So it could get routed back to the requesting provider.
Today, if you can put it in the CCDA, you have a shot. CCDA in itself supports it, but not necessarily everybody, it's not one of the document types necessarily that will be widely supported yet. And FHIR, once we get there, would support it. NCPDP script is the one that currently would not be a standard in scope of TEFCA.
Right, and NCDA is not recognized in the CMS regulations for promoting interoperability as a transport mechanism for PDMP.
But it's recognized for many other drug-related interactions. So it's not a far stretch.
So is that a recommendation we need to make?
That it's too soon until the standards have evolved, or that it's too soon because a substantial number of jurisdictions on the flip side being able to share PDMP, that they would not be ready for that. So,
or can't operationalize it.
Right.
That they're not ready, is that they can't operationalize it. Or some subset can't operationalize it without a change in law. But again, that's not necessarily a problem on the certification side. That's on any requirement to use the certified technology.
Yes, and at this point in time, this would not be, I just want to double check, but I don't think an ONC, ASDP, still getting used to it, could confirm that there is no date on F9 yet because it's new. So that means is that there is no requirement to implement it. And if there's on the other side, F29 is really not in place yet, there is no requirement for certified software to actually start to support it.
With that is correct, Tom. There is no date reference in the NPRM for this one.
Yeah, and the question is that if it's not there, is it helpful to have it in certification or not? Because probably by the time that that might happen, we're possibly talking about consideration of a more current version, maybe shifting from one to another. So is this the appropriate time to include it?
Yeah, if there's no date driving certification, it's unlikely it would get prioritized.
There is work in progress, but it would not necessarily be that it does not meet at this point in time certification to drive it further, particularly if certification cannot drive it yet or there's no program yet to do that. If policies and law and operational start to be available, the interest is certainly there. So is there a need at this point in time for a certification to include it while there's still enough other opportunities to move that forward? And actually, right. Certification would not help anyway.
And a better standard about, or an improved standard about to be released or in process.
We'll also note too that in this NPRM, these criteria F9 and F29 are functional criteria, so they do not today point to any specific standard.
Right, they're functional criteria.
I thought that in F29 there were some different, that you had to support a particular means of transport. So there was a standard for something. I'm just trying to get to the right spot. But I thought there
right,
was
let me be specific, right? So there wasn't a one for the PDMP specific standards. You are correct in F29 that the NPRM does reference within the capabilities, those receive, validate, parse, and filter does point to some existing similarly to the other F20s.
Yeah, because they're looking at, I think it's a choice between direct protocol and the ONC applicable secure health transport version 12. So there is some
exactly
certain standards being able to transport a particular way.
Yes, correct. So for further clarification, we do not point to a content-specific standard for F9 and 29.
But it is permitted to use FHIR R4 per the listing as well. So if they support FHIR R4, that will be fine.
Right, but it also allows for the use of proprietary standards by the technology developers that have developed some of the PDMP technologies in use by the states or the jurisdictions.
Yes, and the F9 has the more optional. And when it talks about filtering and validation, when you only can get view until you get discrete, those would be a question what that really means and how you do that. So they might be functional, but they will be hard to attain. So on the F9 provider side, there would be a number of challenges. We're going to be talking about this end of this week more to get more insight, but there are questions and challenges as to the functional aspects of that when you only have a image or a PDF available or something like that.
So where do we go?
I think we are leaning, and we'll get more confirmation, but leaning that premature at this point in time, based on all the other pieces that need to be put in play, while at the same point in time, that progress can be made because there is interest to get this kind of data more integrated into the workflows. But
and if we're looking at premature, what are the trigger events when action should take place?
PDP side, from our perspective, having the data more widely and consistently available in a structured, discrete format. Not sure yet whether there's a strong preference that we have to wait for FHIR or whether NCP2P script, given familiarity with that, whether that would already be a good starting point.
Or rules slash law change.
Yep.
So another potential recommendation might be education about the value and utility of discrete data. For PDMP administrators.
My opinion, I think that would be wonderful. Because I think there's some misinformation and confusion about exactly what that entails and how it would be used. Although let me say, PDMPs have been around since 1939, and some of the older ones had statutes in place that indicated that the data was available only to the user that requested it, and it could not be further disseminated. It could not even be put in, when they did paper reports, the paper report could not even be put in the doctor's patient files. So there are some old outdated laws that did not even attempt to modify for the new technology. But that's the situation we're in, is that some outdated laws that need to catch up with the times.
I think HIPAA and privacy is probably also part of that educational concept.
Hi, it's Lee Fleischer, and I'm sorry I'm late. That was one of my concerns about the variability between the states and how the way this is written can take that into account. So what I'm hearing is that it does appropriately take that into account. I wouldn't say outdated law hindrance, it's just the law, correct? Yeah.
Well, yeah, it hasn't been. Many of the states have not revisited their statutes or rules to address changes in technology.
But that's a state's decision, so I would be careful. Correct. As opposed to a outdated makes a...
There's got to be a better
judgment.
Yes, you're good point.
So that education might be in collaboration with Department of Justice and other entities.
And does it matter the variability, what's included in the database? Because there is, from what my understanding is, there's wide variability in how the states are implementing. They all have it, but they may implement it differently.
But at the core, for all the PDMPs, they're collecting almost the same data. They're getting information about the prescriber, the dispenser, the drug, and the patient. Some have some extra fields, but at a very minimum, the PDMPs can positively identify who prescribed the medication. They can positively identify who filled the prescription. They know which patient received it. Although some of those fields, it's just a name, date of birth, and address, no set identifier like a driver's license or social security number, anything like that. Most of them just have the basics, and they can identify the medication that was dispensed through the NDC number and quantity. They also have the dates that it was issued and the date that it was given to the patient.
And it's all based on NCP2P transactions, correct, that they're being shared? Or is
it's actually based on the ASAP format,
okay,
and not directly on NCP2P. There is some alignment between the two, but there's also some fields that are not in alignment with one another, nor at USCDI.
But maybe to then clarify the source or the initial data sharing that occurs came from an NCP2P-based transaction that then by some party is being transformed into ASAP. Is that accurate?
Go ahead.
No, I'm not as familiar, so that's why I'm curious.
It typically uses either script or telecommunication standards from NCPDP that then get transformed to ASAP.
Yep.
How much variation is there between jurisdiction on implementing the ASAP standards, Kevin or Pat?
All the states are using some version of ASAP. Some have an older version of version 4.1. And some have implemented up to 4.2b. There's a new version. What was that one? 4.3, Kevin?
5.0 in September.
Okay. So it runs the gamut. The majority of the, there's not even a majority. It's all over the board from 4.1 to 4.2 to A, B. We're all over the board.
What's in the ASAP?
That one's yours, Kevin.
There are 102 fields, and in the new version 5.0, there are 144 fields, primarily looking at, and Pat touched on it before, you have the pharmacy information, name, address, store location, you have the prescriber information, name NPI and or DEA number, the patient information, primarily name, address, date of birth, potentially gender. If it's for an animal, you may have some species information, and then the prescription information that does not typically use RX norm, it uses NDC, the date issue, date filled, possibly the date sold, depending on the state, quantity, prescription number, and there's some additional information.
Hans, do you know if there's been a crosswalk between ASAP and fire resources, or I don't think it's been done against USCDI?
I suspect there has been, but I'm not familiar with that. What kind of crosswalk may have been done. I think a couple of others might know, but if nobody on this call knows, perhaps Scott Robertson or somebody like him might know. I'm not familiar.
This is Naresh. Kevin, thanks a lot for doing this. Could you walk us through if you had any initiatives across where you had to map it to USCDI from ASAP?
There is starting to be, with the new ASAP 5.0, some alignment in both national organizations and federal agencies, looking at ONC and Project USA, looking at AHIMA, looking at CDC for their race and ethnicity codes. Sex/gender is still an issue that's coming up with ASAP. So there has been, I believe, some mapping between fire and earlier versions of ASAP, but I know there has not been mapping with the new 5.0 version. I think there are opportunities coming up for more alignment between ASAP and more of the standards such as USCDI, but they're not there yet.
There is, by the way, an HL7 project that's doing a mapping effort between CDA and fire resources. Kevin, just so you're aware of that.
Okay, that's good to know. Thank you.
That may be helpful to you at some point.
Yeah.
So do we have a reasonable recommendation or plan for a recommendation? Right now, we're recommending that there be a delay. Do we have the trigger events for where things should go forward? Hans Naresh, you have suggestions about what might be trigger events?
I guess one of the things that I believe that should happen or as part of recommendation is that there needs to be more open discussions around the ASAP standard and its ability. It's again a similar model, right? End of the day, you have demographics, you have patient information, you have prescription information, you also have other information that would align with your CDI end of the day. But the challenge that being part of PIMX at some point in time, the challenge that we run into is resource availability and ability to actually promote this to the national standard with US CDI mindset. So that needs to be openly discussed. And when we say as a recommendation that we need to recommend ONC or ASTP to use a standard, there definitely needs to be amalgamation of all these different to a common approach that would align with the FHIR IG end of the day.
Yeah, in alignment with US CDI plus, probably or consideration of US CDI plus.
Yep. One challenge that we probably have not discussed here is jurisdictions and difference in governance, right? If the PDMP data is housed in the Department of Health, like for example in Utah, that's an example, versus in state of Nebraska, it's housed in two different places. One is through Health Information Exchange, another is through the state. There is difference in quality of data among these different areas, so or departments, you could say. And when such things happen, your optionality of data varies heavily. In health information, you actually get more complete data through other demographics enrichment and so on. Whereas if PDMP prescription assess comes through a single source, there is a variation in that. So the governance on that is quite often overlooked. So that's also a thing that needs to be discussed in detail to establish.
Would you be interested in helping flesh out a draft recommendation?
Happy to do that.
Fantastic. Do we have any other thoughts right now about PDMP from any task force members?
Just one question to Pat and Kevin. Would you be able to just high level walk us through timeline on mapping between these US CDI that you mentioned, Kevin, to ASAP at different levels?
I think that we're willing to assist in any way we can. You may also want to reach out to Bill Lockwood, who's the executive director of ASAP, to get his blessing or permission to do that mapping, and he may be able to assist.
Perfect. Thanks, Kevin.
Kevin, thank you so much for spending some time with us today. I really do appreciate it. Most helpful.
I hope we were some help. And if you have any other questions, don't hesitate. We're here to help you as however we can.
Wonderful. I think we have one more agenda item, and then we're going to go to public comment. You're welcome to stay if you'd like.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
So what do we have next on our agenda?
Yep. Steve, so we're going to talk, readdress ECR. That was a question folks wanted to address again and have a little bit more time. So yes, and we do have Laura Kahn on from CDC to provide any programmatic content if needed.
Wonderful. Good morning, Laura.
Hi, Steve.
Also, can we restart the clock, please, for 20 minutes?
Okay, so let me scroll a little bit to the right. A little further. Give everybody a chance to look and refresh their brains on the workgroup recommendations. And maybe it's looking to blow up a little bit.
That is the top of the document, but I'll zoom in if that helps.
Yep. Do we have a typo in 2? HTI1 indicates how we send ECR should we receive the RR. It's true for HTI1. But the language in that item doesn't quite make sense.
Steve, which line are you working at, looking at?
Item number 2.
Okay. This was put in, so we discussed it. It doesn't fully make sense if we continue moving forward with fire only. I think it was just to keep consistency around the language with HTI1. Aaron was recommending including this content in there.
Okay, I was lost is it's HTI1 indicates however you're sending ECR. You get the RR back in the same format. This would be consistent with what was finalized in HTI1.
So I think with this, I think the intent is to say if we transition to fire, referencing that they would be getting fire RR back.
I was thinking the first HTI1 should say HTI2.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's fair.
That's where I was lost. Because otherwise it was saying HTI1 indicates it as reflected in HTI1.
That's fair. I can rework this language.
I would just note too that HTI1 does specify that because HTI2 proposal is pointing only at fire. It is just kind of inherent in the language.
Yes.
Just for the purpose of the associated recommendation here.
It was more a typo where the first one should have been a 2. Hans.
I will be jumping to number 6, so I'll be in queue until you get there, unless you want to jump.
I'm willing to jump.
Do we want to talk about number 1 first?
Oh, sure.
I think just making sure that all the profiles in the IG, I don't think they're explicitly calling it out currently, but ensuring that the EICR, RR, and ERSD are captured. That are referenced within the ECR IG. And so explicit verbiage around that would be ideal.
And if I'm not, EARSD would be there for CDA ECR as well, correct? And if you just do full fire, you have all 3. If you do CDA, there's still EARSD.
Yeah, yes. CDA, we also would want to include ERSD. We can add that.
I think that needs to be clarified that it's either CDA plus ERSD or it's fire and then all 3.
Yeah, we need to be as specific as we can be.
Yeah. Okay. I will tweak that language offline.
Thank you.
We'll get that added.
We definitely interpreted the way that Jill was meaning it to. So, but I agree, it can be more clear.
Yeah.
Who wrote this language?
So this was Aaron, myself, Jillian, and it's several others. We've been going back and forth on the language.
Okay, I'll just note you down that you're changing.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. Perfect. Thank you. Sorry, I didn't put my name in there.
No worries. I just can't see who's talking right now.
Yeah. Do we want to jump to three and talk through three now?
Yes.
All right. So this one was put forward by the public health agencies in particular, and ensuring that certification addresses all functions and data needed for business. So I think one of the nuances, and this includes data that's sourced outside the EHRs. Currently with ECR, if a hospital or a healthcare organization uses a lab that has a separate LIS or a reference laboratory, the lab, an example of this is lab information often comes in not using the standard terminologies that are needed to process this efficiently, either by RCKMS or by the public health agencies. And so this is a push to ensure that the content is aligned with the certification criteria as well.
So, Jill, if I hear you correctly, while data may be distributed across multiple HIT within the reporting source, within the responsible reporting party, that you want to ensure with number three that however that is done, that the report includes all the data, whatever system they live on, whether they're on the EHR, whether they're somewhere else, that the case report is the collation of that information.
Yes, and in alignment with the standard and the defined terminologies.
Question that I have in that regard, there is certification, HIT, the deployment may be distributed based on whatever the client may have, the provider may have. So the actual implementation of that would be frequently them more of a provider having ensured with their HIT suppliers, multiple, that the data is present in the system that's actually doing the reporting. And that's not measured in certification. So how do we, while we can measure that on certification, a particular HIT has all the data and can send the proper case report, whether in actuality that system is the singular one in place or whether there are multiple is not in sync.
This is Steve. That might be part of the onboarding process with public health. But if the system is at least certified that it can do it, it becomes a matter of, is it populated right, correctly in the field? But if it's not, if the system is not capable of populating a message properly, then it's not capable of populating the message properly. Does that make sense?
Most certainly. And I'm wondering whether the focus here is that it states address all functions and data needed to do business. It needs to have all the data that to be certified, you need to support all the required elements. Typically, the testing done is on all required and must support, required can be empty or in CDA. I always get confused about the language they use there. But when you say, so that's clear, have all the data that needs to be there, you can measure that. When you say functions, what would that be that needs to be done? Because that would be certainly part of the distribution as well. I'm not sure what is intended to be tested.
No, that is fair. And I don't think we have Aaron on today, and I don't know what was intended by.
Functions were including the EHR internal work or retrieving data from other systems to generate the message. We can certainly refine the language and I will take ownership of that.
Okay, awesome. Thank you, Steve.
So it would be a requirement to not only test that the output includes everything, but you're looking that it has the ability to receive all the data from elsewhere if it's not otherwise captured in the EHR or it's...
Right, to generate it. We're not looking at trying to say it all has to be within the HIT module. The HIT module just has to, if the HIT module is certified to generate it, it's got to get the data from somewhere. Whether it's internal or external, don't really care.
No.
Make sense?
Yeah, that definitely should be clarified. Otherwise, it's unclear what the scope of functions is.
Very, very much appreciated. So,
do you mind taking a crack at that?
As I said, I gladly will.
Okay. So perfect. Perfect.
Excel, please tag that with me. Let's go to number four.
Okay, this one, certification should ensure the use and implementation of standards in real-world environments meeting expected thresholds for completeness and data quality. This is more of a call out that future work could include insight measures for other public health related performance measures. And that if that work is done, it should align with the current data quality metrics that were developed by the quality assurance work group. This comprised of 31 jurisdictions that kind of aligned on what those metrics should be. And are used for onboarding validation activities by the CDC onboarding team, by the APHL, and most public health agencies. So again, a focus on data.
Would the real-world testing certification criteria already cover a good chunk of this? I would see that data insight might not have some of the measures. That when you have case reporting, that will be applicable, but real world testing, would that cover it?
I think it would cover aspects of this. Laura, what are your thoughts? Tagging you in on this.
I think my answer is I don't know. I don't think we've seen much as it relates to real world testing and ECR that has improved data quality to date, but could it be more stringent and reliable in this space? We'd have to talk more about that.
Yeah. And Laura, does three make sense to you with revisions?
Yeah. I mean, just from a real world example of three, I think what's most obvious to me is having external labs provide non-standardized codes, either for laboratory tests that have been performed or results of laboratory tests, and not providing standardized codes back to the healthcare system, and that not get that therefore not being able to get into an EHR, which then impacts the EHR's ability to trigger and be able to send case reports because they don't get those standardized codes.
That's an excellent point. I will be sure to include that in my little summary, that one of the things that it's got to emulate is non-consistent lab data coming in. will that help?
I think so. I was just providing an example of where we see a pain point in that related. And I think it's a pain point for the EHRs too. If they don't get it, they can't have it. But I think in order to maximize the value of the interoperability solutions, we need to be able to get those standardized codes from external organizations. And I think that's part of what this is pointing to.
Joel, there's a note to you in the chat.
Yes, I can point that to you. Give me a second. I'll get it over.
So how do we feel about four? Do we need to make any revisions?
I'm double checking also on the real world overlap. How much of that will be covered and whether it's therefore helpful to reference or otherwise.
And I can
point to the I guess link out to the metrics I'm addressing in the comment as well, if that would be helpful.
I'm not sure if Molly or Rachel want to comment on that, or the intent of real world testing, and if that could be strengthened to address this.
I might defer to my colleague Jeff, who I think is still on the line, in regards to real world testing content.
Thanks, Molly.
So those requirements are spelled out in the 405 section of subpart D. The elements of a real-world testing plan are spelled out, but the measures are self-developed by developers and submitted in plans. I don't know. Does that answer your question?
I think part of it is the elements as new standards drop into certification. Would the elements therefore include case reporting by virtue of what's already there? I'm trying to find it in the rule, whether real world testing would then effectively expand to include that, or is it something that would have to be named separately in the rule?
Got you. Give me one quick second.
We've got just about 3 minutes left.
Agreed. That's a difference. That will be more an insights question. And you can take that from my perspective. Jeff, I'm checking as well.
So you may need to table that. Okay. And come back.
It would expand. What so F as a category is included in real world testing. We don't call out specific F criteria. So any F criterion would be subject to real world testing.
That's what I thought. Okay.
Yep.
Okay, do we have any issues so I think four is locked down?
Yeah, it may help just to also reference that recognizing that it's picked up in real-world testing as well, that the combination of these measures and real-world testing is where we're looking to advance the quality.
Okay, excellent. Can you note that as real-world testing and give it to me, please? Do we have any questions about number five?
This one's just referencing the importance of coordination and resources.
And looking at number six.
So six, Hans, I know you have some thoughts on this, but essentially suggesting it's 2 years after the introduction of 3.1. All EHRs are working towards 3.1 rather than FHIR. All that we are actively working with, APHL, CDC, that are in general availability or actively sending data. And so this shift to FHIR is likely going to require EHRs to prioritize the adoption of this new standard. And through discussions with EHRs, it's a larger lift. Will likely limit their ability to maintain and enhance the data quality of existing interfaces. And so there will also be an additional burden on the EHRs associated with this to kind of go through that onboarding process as well and data quality checks with the PHAs and APHL CDC.
Yeah, and in addition, the suggestion I was going to make on six was that given that the recommendation would be is that that there remains flexibility on the F side, but that particularly on the F25 side, that currently states that that it would switch over into FHIR, that we suggest that PHAs are either going to extend support for CDA because. It just got put in. There's a lot of work and adoption that's going on. They may have started with FHIR or not, but is that to have a longer line of support, and that there is in the meantime also an opportunity if it's not the PHA, that the intermediary has the opportunity to map from one to the other. And I think we talked about that a little bit, I think, but it would be helpful to recognize and hear that we need to have for a longer period of time that the two can run in parallel so that both provide EHRs, PHAs, and their suppliers, that they can more dynamically shift from one to the other. And then at a later point in time, we might say, okay, now it's time to go to fire for everybody.
So do we push for certification of January 1st, 2029?
I would not say that.
Yeah.
I would just say that on January 2028, to make everybody fire is too soon, that needs to be determined later. But then in the meantime, you can continue on CDA, you can start or start a transition to fire. We need to be flexible about that.
Hans, are you suggesting stronger language about for the EHRs that we continue CDA and fire and not just public health agencies or?
Well, it is more on
just the public health agency side.
We've got about another 30 seconds.
Yeah, I think it's for both to be able to run longer in parallel between the two methods rather than forcing either to go too quickly to fire.
Okay. I can rework some of this language on that as well.
Joel, if you want to help, I'm happy to do so.
That'd be great. So I'll coordinate with you offline.
Sounds good.
Do we have 20 seconds to run through F30, F25?
Rachel, do we have time?
I think we have like probably 5 minutes and then we got to go to public comment, but we can reset the clock for like 5 minutes. Thanks.
Okay. Joel, yours.
All right. So F25, we updated the language in there a little bit. It says receive, validate, parse, and filter electronic initial case reports. I think historically it did not include reportability response data, reportability response, but essentially not just the EICR, but also the reportability response, and added this language around into the destination system. So where it's relatively vague, that could be taken. I think that the goal of receive, validate, and parse is not just populating a database, but getting the data in a useful state and into the destination systems for use by the public health agencies. And so if we're going to include this, I think those additions would be helpful. Any thoughts? Hesitancies around that, Laura? Others?
Nothing for me.
Great. Number two is kind of the same as F5. And then number three is a similar flavor to number six in F5. But kind of the push, and I can work on some stronger language with you, Steve, but essentially the transition to fire, the simultaneous timeline is going to require divided effort with the same amount of funding to prepare for fire adoption while maintaining existing ECR infrastructure, and is likely going to slow the utility of the ECR data to procure support, new technology, new solutions. Any thoughts on this? And Hans and Steve, based on your comments earlier, I think I agree that stronger language of we would recommend kind of dual support for longer, and that certification should be pushed out a little bit for fire.
Yeah, it should be pushed out from a required perspective.
Yeah.
You can start, quote unquote, now, but. And for those that are using the Firebase app, there is more flexibility. If there's a APHL has mapping capabilities, then it's both directions to PHAs. we can throttle that up as we go, as depending on where people are at.
Yeah. And with the APHL, with the transforms, a lot of that is to enable jurisdictions to start seeing fire data, fire EICRs, without kind of that real world data. It will be challenging for jurisdictions to augment their systems in effective ways. Okay. We didn't need the full 5 minutes. And so we can make this language a little
more specific. Happy to help.
Awesome.
But both of the time and working on the text.
Great.
So Rachel, or Seth, let me turn the floor back to you for public comment.
All right, thank you, Steve.
Seth, I'll push it to you.
Yes. So we are going to transition to the public comment portion of our agenda. If you are participating by Zoom today and would like to make a comment, please use the raise hand feature, which is located on the Zoom toolbar at the bottom of your screen. If you are participating by phone only today, you can press *9 to raise your hand. And then once called upon, you can press *6 to mute and unmute your line. And while we give folks a few seconds to raise their hand, I just want to give a couple of reminders. One, just a reminder, the next Group 1 meeting will be next week on August 27th from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern Time. And as a reminder, this will be the final meeting of the Group 1. And then the following week, the week of Labor Day, we'll be moving to the full task force meetings, where we'll be looking at the individual group draft recommendations and working to come to consensus as a full task force on the final set of recommendations during that week of Labor Day. And also, just a reminder that all high-tech meeting materials can be found on healthit.gov and are available to the public. So I am going to just check on the Zoom here. And I do not see any hands raised. Sal, do we have anyone on the line? I see that we do not. So I am going to turn it, Steve, back to you for next steps and to close out our meeting.
Thank you. Do we have any additional comments or any outstanding items we need to touch on today? Floor is open for task force members to raise any questions, raise any issues.
And if we have any suggestions, we do it in the column next to it, correct? So we do it in column, where is it? K.
Yes, please.
Great.
As Seth said, we've got one more task force meeting, Group 1, next week, and then the full task force will be meeting rapidly over 3 days during Labor Day week to compile the work of the different work groups into a master document and submit that to HITECH for its review. I would like to thank all of our subject matter experts that were guests today, Laura, Kevin, and others. And I would like to thank the task force members for their valuable contribution. We could not do this without you. Everybody's input was very, very important. Also like to thank the Excel staff and our ONC friends for making this happen and giving us a wonderful opportunity to provide feedback to ASTP. Thank you so much for your time and effort, and we will see you next week.
Thank you.